Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Brought to you by Farmers. At Farmers, we've seen almost everything, so we know how to cover almost anything. When it's game time, have an experienced player help you stay ahead of the game. Put their experience into play at Farmers.com.
We are Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Here's my take on the All-Star game. I didn't watch much except for highlights and national anthem, right? Just because of Fergie's national anthem, I wanted to see how that this national anthem went down. I really struggle with the All-Star game in the NBA, especially because I think what could be the best of the best of the best playing hard instead devolves into, hey, here's another alley-oop. Hey, here's another wide-open three-pointer. You know, like, it doesn't require that much energy to play defense. Like, you're already there. You're already running up and down. You're already using, you're already getting a good little cardio workout. And the idea that no defense is really being offered, like, eh. Where football, I understand it. Like, you can't play football without somebody potentially getting seriously hurt. Baseball, I understand it. You can't throw somebody's arm out there and have them pitch more than an inning or two innings. Like baseball, I get. Basketball, I don't, and so I struggle. I haven't watched really an NBA All-Star game since Magic Johnson hit a fadeaway the last time he touched a ball in some sort of professional game in the NBA. But they avoided a complete disaster this weekend. They had some PR malfunctions leading up until the All-Star game. Most notably, Anthony Davis, who seemed to ruin his franchise, seemed to ruin the Lakers and the Celtics, hurt all three. And of course, the game before he left for the All-Star game, he's playing the Oklahoma City Thunder. He hurt his shoulder, left the floor, did an MRI. Rich Paul, his agent, just had to be there. And they leave the arena instead of coming back to the bench when there's nothing wrong with his shoulder. Don't believe me, there's nothing wrong. Why did he play in the All-Star game? He's fine. So here's Anthony Davis when he was asked on Saturday about this idea that he doesn't want to play for the Boston Celtics.
I don't have a preferred destination. Like I said, I just want to win. You know, they ask me big market, small market. I don't care. You know, I want to win, you know, and obviously whatever team, you know, I get traded to, you know, play for it that year or whatever. If I get traded, I'm not sure, but just make the best of it. And then, you know, when free agency comes, see what happens. You know, I can't tell the future, but all 29 teams are on the list.
Yeah, all 29 teams. That sounds like Frank Pantangeli. You remember Frank Pantangeli in The Godfather 2? Ramos, you're my one guy who I can count on for movies. You familiar with Frank Pantangeli, Godfather 2?
Godfather 2, yes, most definitely.
Okay, so Frank Pantangeli turned state's evidence, and he's going to sell out Michael Corleone, and he gets on the witness stand at the grand jury, and all of a sudden, they had flown in his brother. It's a Sicilian deal where they fly in his brother, and now all of a sudden he realizes he can't turn on the family.
Oh, Michael Corleone, Michael Corleone. Oh, no, no. In the olive oil business, they come up, right? He all of a sudden completely changed his tune, which is what happened to Anthony Davis this weekend.
He had gotten the memo that, hey, dude, you can't be. And look, there's, even if you listen to that cut, he's like, you know, if I get traded for that year. What? That year? Yeah, that's what he's telling you. Hey, I'll go anywhere for a year, but I'm not going to stay there long term, which means you're not going to want to trade for me. But even that, the all 29 teams is a complete BS statement, and everybody knows it. But it's pretty obvious that whether it's his agent or somebody getting to his agent, most likely the NBA, hey, dude, you got to shut this down. This is not the way in which we can purport ourselves. Here's Adam Silver. Over the weekend, he did the State of the Basketball Union kind of address, talking about how trades and how they're handled in the NBA.
I recognize, and I think it's perfectly appropriate that conversations take place behind closed doors where players or their agents are saying to management, it's my intention to move on for whatever reasons. I think when they make a public spectacle, I hear you in terms of the enormous media interest that comes from it, but that's not the kind of media interest we're looking for.
Yeah, listen, this is bad. It's bad PR. It's bad for everybody. It hurts this team. It hurts two other teams. Like, we shut this down. Talk about it in private, and in public, you put on the happy face, which is exactly what Anthony Davis has done, but only after completely butchering this thing. This from Scott Kushner, who does a great job covering the Pelicans beat. Next week is going to be weird again. There are people within the Pelicans who believe AD has played his last game with the franchise. AD has made it perfectly clear over the weekend he intends to keep playing. The NBA didn't clarify its position, so what's the tipping point? What do you do now? Like, because you can't trade him because the trade deadline has expired, you don't play him? So we had to pay him to not play? On the other hand, the team doesn't seem to want to function with him because he's not in it to actually win. Like, the irony to Anthony Davis saying he wants to go somewhere to where he can win, and I get that you're frustrated. I completely get that you're frustrated in what the Pelicans have done to this point in terms of putting a team around you. Got it. We fired Dell Demps. We hired Alvin Gentry, by the way, a couple years ago because he has a sterling reputation. We've tried some. We traded for DeMarcus Cousins. Like, it's not for lack of trying. We just haven't pulled it off. But, like, now you got 25 games or so left. If you want to win, like, you can actually help make us a winner. That's it. You can help make us a winner. I thought they avoided, for the most part, any PR disasters. Like, was it great? No. No, not really. Was it terrible? No, it wasn't terrible. I mean, somehow the NBA has convinced people that it isn't what it appears to be, right? Remember 2 years ago they talked about, well, we got to make some massive changes with the NBA All-Star game because they're not playing any defense. And then, you know, we see at the All-Star game, they're shooting too many threes, they're not playing any defense. And then we see at the All-Star game, was it 90 threes taken by Team LeBron, 77 taken by Team Giannis? Like, that wasn't close to being good basketball. And this is from somebody who realizes that the talent, the skill is ridiculous, better than it's ever been in the NBA. But you can't tell me that 90 three-pointers in a game is a good thing. It's just not. And the LeBron, you know, picking all those guys that just so happen to be potential free agents this offseason is a good thing. And then you got Kevin Durant winning the MVP. And I think it's kind of perfect. I get that the MVP of the All-Star game doesn't really mean anything. It just doesn't, you know, like league MVP means a little, but not a ton. Finals MVP means a lot, but now he's won all of them. And now he's won. And he has the way to do this thing where when he's around a bunch of his contemporaries, he wants to make sure everybody knows, like, hey, I'm the best scorer out here. When you put the best of the best out here, I'm actually the best of the best. But he's doing it for Team LeBron, right? Like, and crazy enough, like Durant's desire to play for the Golden State Warriors was to get a shot at LeBron to prove he's better than LeBron. So he goes and does that. In some people's mind, in my mind, I thought he was the better player in the NBA Finals when it mattered. Some people carry in last year wasn't as good a team. Okay, or the year before wasn't as good a team. I thought it was actually pretty close in terms of star power on paper, but okay. Then you start to wonder, wait, wouldn't Durant actually be better off with LeBron James? Because LeBron wants to pass and he wants to score. But he said he wants no part of the LeBron James circus. The whole thing is fascinating. But I thought that somebody got to Anthony Davis much the way the Corleones got to Frank Pantangeli. Boy, play for the Celtics? No, no, no. Who told you that? I'll play for the Celtics. I'll play for the Jazz.
No. Listen, me and the Celtics, we go way back. I don't know. What are we talking about?
He didn't want to sleep with the fishes. That's basically what it is.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
You know what the best way to handle conflict is? No, it's not go through a third person, go through arbitration. No, it's not go through therapy. No, it's not face-to-face communication. No, it's not text-to-text conversation. It's going through social media. I'm kidding, of course. Right? That's Antonio. Antonio Brown wanted his story out over the weekend over what's really going on. But this is after liking an Instagram that called Ben Roethlisberger a rapist. This is after already posting a video that he's saying goodbye to Pittsburgh. One tweet was, no conflict, just a matter of respect, mutual respect. He has an owner mentality like he can call out anybody, including coaches. Players know that they can't say anything, but otherwise they meal ticket gone. It's a dirty game within a game. Hashtag truth. That's when he was asked by somebody on Twitter, what caused the conflict between you and Ben Roethlisberger? No conflict, just a matter of respect. Okay, well, if there was no conflict, then there's no matter of respect or disrespect. And I understand the idea that Ben Roethlisberger is not without blame. I get that. Ben Roethlisberger deserves a portion of the blame. But Ben Roethlisberger did not, nor has he ever, quit on his football team, left the practice and went AWOL before a play-in or play-out a football game. He didn't. And let's also be honest that though Ben can be a huge pain, and Ben will say some things in the media which others cannot, he's also won a quarterback. And two, like Antonio Brown has done this time and again. He's gotten into it with coaches on the sideline. He's gotten into it with players on the sideline. And then you factor in the last time we heard about Antonio Brown and the Pittsburgh Steelers was when he walked away from the team and then wanted to show up on Sunday to play. And so he's gonna meet with the team president. He's going to meet with Mr. Rooney. And I think the first thing out of his mouth, if he wants any chance of this being reparable, is to go Happy Gilmore. You remember Happy Gilmore when Chubbs had given so much advice to Happy, and finally Happy came hat in hand and apologized? I'm smart. You're stupid. Right? Sounded something like this.
I'm stupid. You're smart. I was wrong. You were right. You're the best. I'm the worst. You're very good looking. I'm not attractive.
There you go. Okay, so now that we got that, that's how it has to start. I don't know if there's coming back from calling your teammate a rapist. I would guess that's a no. And you can sit here and go like, well, he didn't. He just liked a... Come on, dude. There's places you can't go. And if I'm the Pittsburgh Steelers and I sit down with him and he still hasn't apologized to his coach... He hasn't apologized to his team, let alone apologizing to Ben Roethlisberger for liking an Instagram or even for not showing up week of the Bengals game. No apologies there. Start with I'm sorry. It's actually a really good lesson, don't you think, Ramos, to music for when he gets married? Like, just wake up and go, morning, honey, I'm sorry. What are you sorry for? I don't know. I'm going to do something that's going to tick you off today. So just sorry. That's 18 years in the business, in the marriage business, it's a good way. You just start out the day with an I'm sorry, because you're going to say or do something stupid. It's kind of part of the deal.
I appreciate the heads up there, Doug. It's always good to try and be a little bit ahead of the curve as opposed to behind it.
No question. Okay, so then it comes down to, can you repair this relationship? And my guess is you can't. I think it's interesting on how both he and Le'Veon Bell are in these kind of weird, precarious, hey, the world has changed. The world has changed. I said this last week about Zion Williamson, where Zion Williamson 15 years ago, I don't know if there's nearly the adoration from NBA scouts like there is now. Because Zion Williamson 15 years ago is an undersized power forward who can't guard centers. Now, he's the perfect small ball center. Like, NBA game has changed that much in 15 years. And it's worked, the world has worked in his favor. Tim Duncan, I don't know how Tim Duncan, I don't know how Tim Duncan fits in this NBA. He wasn't, he's a low post player, a low post to high post scorer. Like, would he evolve? I guess. But he was around late in the NBA and he didn't evolve into being a perimeter face up shooter. Like, wasn't his game. He became a center and he's never been a guy who moves the great laterally. So how would he fare with how the teams play now? I'm guessing not great. So he got out at the right time. Le'Veon Bell holding out, losing out on $14 million when teams are showing that they're better off with multiple running backs. And the team that paid their running back a year early in Todd Gurley couldn't use him enough in the Super Bowl because either he wasn't healthy or C.J. Anderson was just a better option or maybe a little bit of both. Or maybe one beget the other. Le'Veon Bell sitting out there thinking 15 years ago he gets paid now. And we're coming off a Super Bowl where though the New England Patriots tried to get an elite talent at wide receiver, they couldn't get it done, and they still found a way to win without one. Like, hey, we can win without you, and winning is actually more important than the stats that Antonio Brown puts up. I mean, I know he's not Dez Bryant, but the idea that Dez Bryant was out of work for much of this year shows you what people think about these alpha wide receivers who think they're more important than they actually are. Like, the league is screaming to you, we're changing. Get on board. The Giants have Odell Beckham Jr. and they've thought about trading him. What's that tell you? But he should start the conversation with, I'm sorry, I was wrong. And in addition to which, at the same time he has a conversation with Mr. Rooney saying, I'm sorry, I was wrong, there should be at least a text, if not a phone conversation previous to that with Mike Tomlin, and frankly, at least a text to Ben Roethlisberger. Hey, my bad, dude, this thing spiraled out of control. I was just trying to get out of town, but I want to apologize, maybe not for anything else, but for how I acted week 17. I was really upset, but I shouldn't have gone AWOL from the team. Until you start there, there can be no legitimate conversation. This idea that two or three wrongs somehow make his wrong a right, that's the most immature thing of all of them.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
Jason LaCanfora joins us on the Doug Gottlieb Show. Of course, Jason is the insider for all things NFL on CBS Sports and CBS Sports Interactive. Follow him on Twitter as well. Jason, what are you hearing in regards to Kyler Murray and how much you have to kind of build a fit around him in order to get the most out of him?
Yeah, I mean, look, he may not be everybody's cup of tea for the reasons of height and for, you know, the offense that he comes out of, but you know, there's a dude not terribly larger than him from that exact same system who, you know, pretty much put the league on its ear the second half of the season. And I don't know that he comes in and does what Baker Mayfield did, but I think you're looking at guys, coaches who haven't even had that much success from that system now running NFL teams, and you're seeing more and more mobile quarterbacks playing sooner than people expected. You're seeing Lamar Jackson come in and save a team season, save a coach's job, get a team that was floundering at 4-5 to a division title. I mean, albeit in an unconventional manner, and maybe in a way that's not totally sustainable, but Kyler Murray's done a lot more in the pocket than I think Lamar Jackson had done. at a similar instance in time. So, and this was not a kid who you saw getting plays blown up at the line of scrimmage left and right. He didn't have a high rate of balls being knocked down. He did have a high completion percentage from the pocket. These guys are an anomaly. Fran Tarkington, Drew Brees, Russell Wilson, Doug Flutie, and I know this guy is more Flutie than even Brees, but he's young. He's going to be incredibly cheap. You're going to control him for 5 years plus two franchise tags. I think he's going in the top half of the first round, and it may be via trade. It may be somebody moving up ahead of the Giants at six. Not that I think he's necessarily a fit for the Giants, but I think you may have to go in the top five when it's all said and done to get him.
Okay, what about the Cardinals? Where are they with Josh Rosen, a guy who it's easy to watch him throw and go like, oh, yeah, that's an NFL quarterback. Yeah. But for whatever reason, and Jason, I've said this back when he was in college and into the draft, like you go to St. John Bosco where he played and starred in high school. You go to UCLA and the multiple coordinators, and you go now to the Arizona Cardinals. Yeah. And for whatever reason, nobody walks away from Josh Rosen going, man, I love that guy. I love that guy. No one has that feeling. Where are the Cardinals in their level of love and attraction to their former first-round draft pick?
I think they are of a mindset where they want to get out of one. I think above and beyond all else, they don't picking at one. I mean, Bosa, Quinnen Williams, whomever they take there is not going to turn that franchise around overnight. They need multiplicity. They need quality, but they also need volume. They need to fix themselves at the point of attack on both sides of the ball. They need skill position players. They need defensive backs. They've got a pass rusher, and I guess they've got a running back, although I don't know what they were doing with him last year, and they don't have a whole lot else. So I think that they realize that you can't just punt every 6 months. Like they hired a coach, gave him no chance to succeed, then punted on him after a season. Keep all the decision makers in place. Give the decision makers more power than ever. Hire a particular coach with a very minimal skill set. I mean, he was not an effective head coach in college. I guess he was an effective coordinator in college, although it's not like he let the world on fire with Patrick Mahomes. And I think there's a sense now that, okay, let's see what we have in Josh Rosen. If they take Kyler Murray first overall, they're going to get pennies on the dollar for Rosen. It'd be a sell-low proposition, and they just moved up to 10 a year ago. It's still the Bidwells. It's still Steve Keim. If they have that little conviction in how they run their football team, they probably shouldn't be running it. So I think their primary objective is to get out of one and let somebody else go up there for a particular defensive player or in their preference for a quarterback, because if they're not taking a quarterback, then that's somebody who wasn't going to come off their board anyway. But I think to evaluate Rosen under those circumstances, you fired his first coordinator like 6 weeks into his career. You guys paid Bradford and Glenn and all that money to stink so that you had to go to this kid under reverse circumstances when you're not running the ball, you don't have an offensive line, and now you got a first-time play caller. I mean, at some point, they got to look within and realize it's not this individual or that individual. It took us collectively to get to this point where we're picking first overall.
No, I'm with you. I would like look Mahomes. In fairness, like Mahomes threw for 5,052 yards, led the country in passing. So I mean, I'm a little bit more in the Kingsbury had more success than Kingsbury was better than I think the record would. There's a lot. Here's what I'll tell you. The same reason that college coaches struggle, that great college coaches record-wise struggle in the pros, is the same reason I think he could do it, because coaching in the pros is just about coaching. It ain't about recruiting. It ain't about donors. It ain't about anything else. Just can you hire the people around you to coach the parts that you don't know to coach? Is that a fair thing, right? Because otherwise,
well, we're going to find out. We're going to find out. I mean, I can remember them going up to Iowa State and getting skull-dragged in, like, Patrick Mahomes' second or third-to-last game in college, you know? I mean, Mahomes got a redshirt year, got coached up by Kafka and Reed, and then set the world on fire. I mean, I don't know. I mean, how much credit am I going to give Cliff Kingsbury for that? I don't know. I think we'll find out. What does he do with Rosen, or if they take this risk on Murray? You know, I'll just say this. I can remember the 49ers a few years ago hiring a guy on the defensive side of the ball who nobody else would have hired as a head coach in a million years, sure, over-empowering him and then blowing him out after a year. And then, yes, going the other way and making a massive play for Chip Kelly and then blowing him out after a year. I smell a little bit of that here, but we'll see.
Yeah, no, you're right. The lack of decisiveness, lack of conviction, your what is it from Star Wars? Like your lack of faith. I got to think.
I don't know. I'm not the guy. I would not be able to correct you.
Thank you.
No one knows less about Star Wars than me, probably.
Your lack of faith is disturbing. Jason Lockham, okay, joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. All right, let's get to Antonio Brown. Mr. Rooney's going to go down and meet with him, but he goes on like a, hey, let me tell you what the truth is here on Twitter, and he puts the blame on Ben Roethlisberger. How does that go over in NFL circles?
I mean, everybody in that building knows he doesn't like the coach and he doesn't like the quarterback, and I've been reporting it since the fallout in Week 17, and actually reported it way back in Week 2 or 3 when he went AWOL. Actually reported it way back in July, in the first week of camp, when they told him, you can't have your own photographer, you can't have your own nutritionist on the field during training camp, you can't have your own social media guy running around the sidelines. Those dudes got to go. And he's like, oh, really, Mike Tomlin, after all I've done for you? And then he went MIA to Pittsburgh for a couple days, and they said he had an injury. He wasn't hurt. He had bruised feelings. So he felt like Ben got too much control of this offense and that the offensive coordinator is too tight to Ben and with Ben, and Ben can change whatever he wants at the line of scrimmage. And, you know, this is Ben's offense and not our offense. And, you know, we get the blame, but Ben doesn't. So that stuff's been festering for a while. So I don't think he put anything on Twitter that you know, the Rooneys weren't well aware of, that Tomlin wasn't well aware of, that Kevin Colbert wasn't well aware of. Can they build this bridge? I tend to think not, and he still really doesn't want to be there, and I don't know that he's going to show near enough contrition for what it would take for this ownership group to say this isn't addition by subtraction to some degree. But it is a long off season too, you know, and we'll see. That people haven't been burning up their phone lines yet, but I think most people are also just waiting to get to the combine in 9 days when everybody's going to be in this relatively small town for 5-6 days, and that's when things usually get done. But I don't know that they're able to put this genie back in the bottle.
Okay, what about Odell Beckham Jr.? Like, now there's this story that they were going to trade him last year, or thinking about trading him last year. Then the Patriots were interested, and they're like, wait a second, Patriots know something we don't know. Continued kind of discuss. Jay Glazer put it in there that his bold prediction was that he'd be moved. What are you hearing in regards to Odell Beckham Jr., the possibility that before his big money new deal kicks in, he's moved this offseason?
I don't know how they get around a pretty decisive cap hit. I mean, it would take a real chunk out of their ability to do anything else. I don't think they would be trading from a position of strength if they did it. And I mean, anything could happen. Wayne Gretzky was traded. The owner came out last year publicly and said, hey, I might have to move on from this guy, you know, when that tape came out. So it's not happy, happy, joy, joy there. But I also know if they do draft a quarterback, he's going to have somebody to throw to, right? And the offensive line isn't a strength, hasn't been a strength, and I don't know that it's going to get better in this next offseason or drastically better. And I don't know, man. I think at the end of the day, he's back there at least for another year. But again, six-month offseason, a lot of things could go haywire.
It's really crazy, right? I mean, this is... It's the NBA, the NFL becoming a little bit like the NBA.
Yeah, all these subplots, all these different sort of interpersonal fraying relationships. And with the advent of social media, a lot of the players feeling like I do have my voice and I can express it in different ways. I don't think it's changing anytime soon.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Jason Lockham IV is our guest. What are you hearing in regards to Rob Gronkowski, likely that he returns for another season?
I still think at the end of the day, he's played his last football game, and that was the sense I got from numerous people in that organization leading up to the Super Bowl. that for as good as he felt at the end of the season, he you know, that's not how he felt in like the middle of November, and not how he felt around Thanksgiving. And after all, he's kind of put his body through to this point in time that, you know, he's kind of, he saved all his pennies. He has other avenues open to him, and he loves football, but he's, you know, your pain threshold only goes so far. And, you know, the prospect of another back surgery, you know, another knee surgery is sort of in the back of his mind. So, you know, he wasn't able to attain the thresholds that they set up last year that seemed to be relatively modest in terms of his incentives. You know, he didn't hit any of them because he didn't really start feeling like himself until the end of the year. I think this is it.
Okay, what about Foles? Does he end up with the Jacksonville Jaguars?
Where else? I mean, like, I don't know where else he could end up, honestly, at this point, you know? I mean, the Redskins aren't going to pay a 30-year-old guy $20 million a year when they're going to have to give Alex Smith $54 million the next two, you know, probably to never play again. Miami is tearing it down. They've got like $6 million in cap space. They're going to be gutting that roster and building for the future. Like, they've got to draft a quarterback or take a shot on trading for Jacoby Brissett or sign Teddy Bridgewater. I mean, Nick Foles, he's not going to be there in 2 or 3 years in all likelihood when maybe they're turning the corner. I mean, who am I missing? You know what I mean? Like, it's when you have five go in the first round last year, and then you have three pretty significant trades, at least two of them, you know, that were, you could call more or less blockbusters, and then you got a bunch of other playoff quarterbacks signed for big money in other teams. Like, there's not the pressing need this year. I mean, the Giants aren't going to cut Eli and sign Nick Foles. You know what I mean? Like, what is that? So, yeah, I think it's Jacksonville or bust.
I want to ask about Alex Smith. I've heard from people close to him that it's not even a consideration, really, at this point, that he'll play football again. Isn't there a way in which they can get cap relief? He has to declare he's retired, right, in order for that to happen?
Yeah. I mean, yes, they could. But, I mean, they're probably going to have to work out some sort of arrangement, and I'm sure that they have, you know, insurance will contribute a certain percentage. And but this year, short term, you know, league year starts March 13th. I don't think it's rectified, you know what I mean, by then. And I don't know that he's going to be, you know, as much as I don't think he's playing about this year, you know, the finality of retiring and going through all that minutiae I just mentioned there and filling out all these papers and all these, like, I don't know that he's there mentally either. So I think the Redskins are going to have to live with a degree of uncertainty with that situation, at least through this offseason.
All right, going to be fascinating to hear from you after you go to the Combine. In the meantime, we appreciate all your insight, all your info, all your knowledge. Thanks so much for being our guest.
Oh, thanks for having me, buddy. Anytime. Thank you.